Chapter 99. Of the fear that no space in the life of man could overcome that quarter of a century behind the prison bars. She had no blame to bestow upon him, therefore. Nothing to reproach him with, no emotions in her faithful heart, but great compassion and unbounded tenderness. This is why it was that, even as he sat before her on his sofa, in the brilliant light of a bright Italian day, the wonderful city without and the splendors of an old palace within, she saw him at the moment in the long familiar gloom of his Marshalsea lodging, and wished to take her seat beside him, and comfort him, and be again full of confidence with him, and of usefulness to him. If he divined what was in her thoughts, his own were not in tune with it. After some uneasy moving in his seat, he got up and walked about, looking very much dissatisfied. "Is there anything else you wish to say to me, dear father?"
"No, no.
Nothing else."
"I am sorry you have not been pleased with me, dear. I hope you will not think of me with displeasure now. I am going to try, more than ever, to adapt myself as you wish to what surrounds me, for indeed I have tried all along, though I have failed, I know."
Amy, he returned, turning short upon her. "You have habitually hurt me."
"Hurt you, father? I?"
"There is a hum a topic," said Mr. Dorrit, looking all about the ceiling of the room, and never at the attentive, uncomplainingly shocked face, "a painful topic, a series of events which I wish altogether to obliterate. This is understood by your sister, who has already remonstrated with you in my presence. It is understood by your brother. It is understood by by every one of delicacy and sensitiveness except yourself, I am sorry to say, except yourself. You, Amy, you alone, and only you, constantly revive the topic, though not in words."
She laid her hand on his arm. She did nothing more. She gently touched him. The trembling hand may have said, with some expression, "Think of me, think how I have worked, think of my many cares."
But she said not a syllable herself. There was a reproach in the touch so addressed to him, that she had not foreseen, or she would have withheld her hand. He began to justify himself in a heated, stumbling, angry manner, which made nothing of it. "I was there all those years. I was universally acknowledged as the head of the place. I caused you to be respected there, Amy. I gave my family a position there. I deserve a return. I claim a return. I say, sweep it off the face of the earth and begin afresh. Is that much? I ask, is that much?"
He did not once look at her, as he rambled on in this way, but gesticulated at, and appealed to, the empty air. "I have suffered. Probably I know how much I have suffered better than anyone, than anyone. If I can put that aside, if I can eradicate the marks of what I have endured, and can emerge before the world a gentleman unspoiled, unspotted, is it a great deal to expect, I say again, is it a great deal to expect, that my children should do the same, and sweep that accursed experience off the face of the earth?"
In spite of his flustered state, he made all these exclamations in a carefully suppressed voice, lest the valet should overhear anything. "Accordingly, they do it. Your sister does it. Your brother does it. You alone, my favorite child, whom I made the friend and companion of my life, when you were a mere baby, do not do it. You alone say you can't do it. I provide you with valuable assistance to do it. I attach an accomplished, and highly bred lady, Mrs. General, to you, for the purpose of doing it. Is it surprising that I should be displeased? Is it necessary that I should defend myself for expressing my displeasure? No."
Notwithstanding which, he continued to defend himself, without any abatement of his flushed mood. "I am careful to appeal to that lady for confirmation, before I express any displeasure at all. I necessarily make that appeal within limited bounds, or I should render legible, by that lady, what I desire to be blotted out. Am I selfish? Do I complain for my own sake? No. No. Principally for your sake, Amy. Apostrophe, this last consideration plainly appeared, from his manner of pursuing it, to have just that instant come into his head. I said I was hurt. So I am. So I am determined to be, whatever is advanced to the contrary. I am hurt that my daughter, seated in the lap of fortune, should mope and retire, and proclaim herself unequal to her destiny. I am hurt that she should systematically reproduce what the rest of us blot out, and seem I had almost said positively anxious to announce to wealthy and distinguished society that she was born and bred in a place that I myself decline to name. But there is no inconsistency, not the least, in my feeling hurt, and yet complaining principally for your sake, Amy. I do, I say again, I do. It is for your sake that I wish you, under the auspices of Mrs. General, to form a surface. It is for your sake that I wish you to have a truly refined mind, and, in the striking words of Mrs. General, to be ignorant of everything that is not perfectly proper, placid, and pleasant. Apostrophe, he had been running down by jerks, during his last speech, like a sort of ill-adjusted alarum. The touch was still upon his arm. He fell silent, and after looking about the ceiling again for a little while, looked down at her. Her head drooped, and he could not see her face, but her touch was tender and quiet, and in the expression of her dejected figure there was no blame, nothing but love. He began to whimper, just as he had done that night in the prison, when she afterwards sat at his bedside till morning, exclaimed that he was a poor ruin, and a poor wretch in the midst of his wealth, and clasped her in his arms. Hush, hush, my own dear. Kiss me. Apostrophe was all she said to him. His tears were soon dried, much sooner than on the former occasion, and he was presently afterwards very high with his valet, as a way of righting himself for having shed any. With one remarkable exception, to be recorded in its place, this was the only time, in his life of freedom and fortune, when he spoke to his daughter Amy of the old days. But now, the breakfast hour arrived, and with it Miss Fanny from her apartment, and Mr. Edward from his apartment. Both these young persons of distinction were something the worse for late hours. As to Miss Fanny, she had become the victim of an insatiate mania for what she called going into society, and would have gone into it head foremost 50 times between sunset and sunrise, if so many opportunities had been at her disposal. As to Mr. Edward, he too, had a large acquaintance, and was generally engaged, for the most part, in dicing circles, or others of a kindred nature, during the greater part of every night. For this gentleman, when his fortunes changed, had stood at the great advantage of being already prepared for the highest associates, and having little to learn. So much was he indebted to the happy accidents which had made him acquainted with horse dealing and billiard marking. At breakfast, Mr. Frederick Dorrit likewise appeared. As the old gentleman inhabited the highest story of the palace, where he might have practiced pistol shooting without much chance of discovery by the other inmates, his younger niece had taken courage to propose the restoration to him of his clarionet, which Mr. Dorrit had ordered to be confiscated, but which she had ventured to preserve. Notwithstanding some objections from Miss Fanny, that it was a low instrument, and that she detested the sound of it, the concession had been made. But it was then discovered that he had had enough of it, and never played it, now that it was no longer his means of getting bread. He had insensibly acquired a new habit of shuffling into the picture galleries, always with his twisted paper of snuff in his hand, much to the indignation of Miss Fanny, who had proposed the purchase of a gold box for him, that the family might not be discredited, which he had absolutely refused to carry when it was bought, and of passing hours and hours before the portraits of renowned Venetians. It was never made out what his dazed eye saw in them, whether he had an interest in them merely as pictures, or whether he confusedly identified them with a glory that was departed, like the strength of his own mind. But he paid his court to them with great exactness, and clearly derived pleasure from the pursuit. After the first few days, Little Dorrit happened one morning to assist at these attentions. It so evidently heightened his gratification that she often accompanied him afterwards, and the greatest delight of which the old man had shown himself susceptible since his ruin arose out of these excursions, when he would carry a chair about for her from picture to picture, and stand behind it, in spite of all her remonstrances, silently presenting her to the noble Venetians. It fell out that, at this family breakfast, he referred to their having seen in a gallery, on the previous day, the lady and gentleman whom they had encountered on the great Saint Bernard. "I forget the name," apostrophe said he. "I dare say you remember them, William? I dare say you do, Edward? Apostrophe, 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 I remember 'em well enough," apostrophe said the latter. "I should think so," apostrophe observed Miss Fanny, with a toss of her head, and a glance at her sister. "But they would not have been recalled to our remembrance, I suspect, if Uncle hadn't tumbled over the subject." "Apostrophe, my dear, what a curious phrase," apostrophe said Mrs. General. "Would not inadvertently lighted upon, or accidentally referred to, be better?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank you very much, Mrs. General," apostrophe returned the young lady. "No, I think not. On the whole, I prefer my own expression." Apostrophe, this was always Miss Fanny's way of receiving a suggestion from Mrs. General. But she always stored it up in her mind, and adopted it at another time. "I should have mentioned our having met Mr. and Mrs. Gowan, Fanny," apostrophe said Little Dorrit, "even if Uncle had not. I have scarcely seen you since, you know. I meant to have spoken of it at breakfast, because I should like to pay a visit to Mrs. Gowan, and to become better acquainted with her, if Papa and Mrs. General do not object." Apostrophe, "Well, Amy," apostrophe said Fanny, "I am sure I am glad to find you at last expressing a wish to become better acquainted with anybody in Venice. Though whether Mr. and Mrs. Gowan are desirable acquaintances remains to be determined." Apostrophe, "Mrs. Gowan I spoke of, dear." Apostrophe, "No doubt," apostrophe said Fanny. "But you can't separate her from her husband, I believe, without an act of parliament." Apostrophe, "Do you think, Papa," apostrophe inquired Little Dorrit, with diffidence and hesitation, "there is any objection to my making this visit?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "Really, apostrophe," he replied. "What is Mrs. General's view?" Apostrophe, "Mrs. General's view was, that not having the honor of any acquaintance with the lady and gentleman referred to, she was not in a position to varnish the present article. She could only remark, as a general principle observed in the varnishing trade, that much depended on the quarter from which the lady under consideration was accredited to a family so conspicuously niched in the social temple as the family of Dorrit." At this remark the face of Mr. Dorrit gloomed considerably. He was about connecting the accrediting with an obtrusive person of the name of Clennam, whom he imperfectly remembered in some former state of existence, to blackball the name of Gowan finally, when Edward Dorrit Esquire came into the conversation, with his glass in his eye, and the preliminary remark of "I say you there. Go out, will you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, which was addressed to a couple of men who were handing the dishes round, as a courteous intimation that their services could be temporarily dispensed with. Those menials having obeyed the mandate, Edward Dorrit Esquire proceeded. "Perhaps it's a matter of policy to let you all know that these Gowans in whose favor, or at least the gentlemen's, I can't be supposed to be much prepossessed myself are known to people of importance, if that makes any difference." Apostrophe, "That, I would say," apostrophe observed the fair varnisher, "makes the greatest difference. The connection in question, being really people of importance and consideration, apostrophe, as to that, apostrophe, said Edward Dorr Esquire, I'll give you the means of judging for yourself. You are acquainted, perhaps, with the famous name of Myrtle? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the great Myrtle. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. General. The Myrtle, apostrophe, said Edward Dorr Esquire. They are known to him. Mrs. Gowan, I mean the Dowager, my polite friend's mother is intimate with Mrs. Myrtle, and I know these two, to be on their visiting list. Apostrophe, if so, a more undeniable guarantee could not be given, apostrophe, said Mrs. General to Mr. Dorrit, raising her gloves and bowing her head, as if she were doing homage to some visible graven image. I beg to ask my son, from motives of curiosity, apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit observed, with a decided change in his manner, how he becomes possessed of this untimely information. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it's not a long story, sir, apostrophe, returned Edward Dorrit Esquire, unusual habit out of hand. To begin with, Mrs. Myrtle is the lady you had the parley with at what's his name place. Apostrophe, Martigny, apostrophe, interposed Miss Fanny with an air of infinite languor. Martigny, apostrophe, assented her brother, with a slight nod and a slight wink, in acknowledgement of which, Miss Fanny looked surprised, and laughed and reddened. How can that be, Edward? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. You informed me that the name of the gentleman with whom you conferred was Osparkler. Indeed, you showed me his card. Sparkler. Apostrophe, no doubt of it, father, but it doesn't follow that his mother's name must be the same. Mrs. Myrtle was married before, and he is her son. She is in Rome now, where probably we shall know more of her, as you decide to winter there. Sparkler has just come here. I passed last evening in company with Sparkler. Sparkler is a very good fellow on the whole, though rather a bore on one subject, in consequence of being tremendously smitten with a certain young lady. Apostrophe here Edward Dorrit Esquire, eyed Miss Fanny threw his glass across the table. We happened last night to compare notes about our travels, and I had the information I have given you from Sparkler himself. Apostrophe here he ceased. Continuing to eye Miss Fanny through his glass, with a face much twisted, and not ornamentally so, in part by the action of keeping his glass in his eye, and in part by the great subtlety of his smile. Under these circumstances, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, I believe I express the sentiments of Mrs. General, no less than my own, when I say that there is no objection. But quite the contrary to your gratifying your desire, Amy. I trust I may hail this desire, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, in an encouraging and forgiving manner. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.